I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Assisted suicide in Scotland.
The Assisted Dying Bill for Terminally Ill Adults Scotland Bill falls.
Analysis of major developments in two countries in the fight against medical-laden dying. The month of March. A look at recent pro-life rallies in four U.S. states. Plus, protector of families. A Catholic financial advisor has a message of hope for parents feeling the pinch in a tough economy.
Church leaders in Scotland are praising a recent move by lawmakers to reject assisted suicide. The Scottish Parliament voted against the measure late last week.
The result of the vote on motion 21005 in the name of Liam MacArthur is yes 57, no 69. There was one abstention. The motion is therefore not agreed. And the Assisted Dying Bill for Terminally Ill Adults Scotland Bill falls.
The proposal would have made assisted suicide legal in the northwestern European nation. Supporters were confident the bill would pass, especially after it sailed through two previous votes. Church leaders credit the defeat to the power of prayer. In a statement to EWTN, Scotland's Bishops' Conference said, quote, "Prayer is what moved hearts on this important issue. We are over the moon. Glory be to God that life has triumphed." This comes as the government in Alberta, Canada, considers new protections for minors in an assisted suicide program. The bill also would increase guardrails for those with mental illness. The measure would limit assisted suicide in Alberta to patients who are age 18 or older, and it would prohibit the procedure for those who are suffering solely from a mental illness. For more, we turn to Matt Valliere, Executive Director of the Patients' Rights Action Fund. Matt, thank you for joining us. There is so much to unpack, including the vote in Scotland.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. But first, to Canada, what is your take on the move by the government in Alberta?
So, look, in Canada, they have really gone off the deep end on this assisted suicide and euthanasia push. You have people who are having mental illnesses receiving early death at the hands of the doctors who are supposed to be protecting them. And many times this is driven by their mental illnesses, and they can get assisted suicide and euthanasia through what's known as Track 2 in Canada. So Track 2 allows for assisted suicide and euthanasia for people who are not terminally ill. Track 1 is for those who are supposedly terminally ill. It's a faster track. Track 2 takes a little bit longer. But, I mean, even just recently, a young man in his early 20s received euthanasia at the hands of doctors in Canada who, because he had a physical condition that he himself deemed intolerable, or the treatment for which was intolerable, as the Canadian law says, he was able to get euthanasia. So he's partially blind in one eye and had diabetes. But the fact of the matter is that he had acute clinical depression and years of mental illness. This really, and many other cases like it, have raised alarm bells, and the government of Alberta, the province there, is doing something about it. The Alberta bill, it's preemptively striking at trying to create a euthanasia restriction to only adults, because there is talk by proponents about extending it back to children, minors. They're calling it mature minors. So this is a real concern, as is the mental health. But, you know, the bill does some other things. So it would actually, in effect, completely remove Track 2. So Track 2 is for non-terminally ill physical conditions. So this is disabilities. Yeah. What most people would consider and what the Americans with Disabilities Act here considers a disability, you can be euthanized for that in Canada. So this is a real concern, and it's been a concern not only of the province of Alberta and many Canadians, but also the UN has weighed in on this. So disability rights groups in Canada brought forward to the UN Committee for Human Rights the question about Track 2. And in fact, the Human Rights Committee very forcefully rebuked Canada for having Track 2 at all and has called for its complete repeal.
Wow. And Matt, turning now to Scotland, what was your reaction when you saw the assisted suicide bill had been defeated?
Both surprise and delight. You know, we had known that it was really on razor's edge. And thankfully, human dignity and compassion really won out in that circumstance. But that bill would have effectively legalized something similar to what they have as Track 2 in Canada, or sorry, Track 1 in Canada. And it was for terminally ill people. But just like those similar restrictions here in the States, oftentimes, because the definition of terminal is so mushy, you end up with some people who are obviously not terminally ill getting lethal drugs under these laws. Mm-hmm. So, for example, people with diabetes can forego care as a patient, or if they don't have access to that care, they can receive lethal drugs under the law. Similarly, young women with anorexia are being helped in their suicides by doctors in places like Colorado and California. And the Scotch did not want for what's happening here to happen in their own country. So that I think really, really pushed some members of parliament there to, it's called Holyrood, to vote no. And we were just delighted that they did so. As any legalization of assisted suicide and euthanasia will automatically impact others considering it. If you normalize this thing and make it just part of another part of medicine, it really does anesthetize people's sensibilities to the horror.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for the work that you're doing and just for sounding the alarm on as you said, our ability to kind of become insensitive to just how dire these situations are. And thank you for the work that you do.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
A new report says last year in the United States, there was a slight increase in the number of abortions. The findings are from the pro-abortion Guttmacher Institute. The report says there were more than 1.1 million abortions last year. That is an increase of around 0.2% from 2024. One policy expert says the findings show the top priority for pro-lifers should be stopping telehealth abortions.
What's really concerning is we see a big increase in telehealth abortions. They found that in states with abortion bans, over 91,000 women obtained abortions by telehealth. And that was over a 25% increase from the previous year. So this really shows that telehealth abortions are increasing abortion numbers, and putting some limits on these telehealth abortions needs to be a top priority for pro-lifers.
A pro-lifer in California heard a local hospital is offering second trimester abortions, so she sprang into action. Mary Waldorf says she learned from community leaders that Enloe Medical Center in Chico is performing second trimester abortions. This prompted her to organize a petition to stop the practice. Waldorf also says doctors and nurses expressed serious concerns over the plan, especially with its lack of conscience protections.
The pediatrician went and talked to an administrator, and she was told internally, if there was enough people who came forward and spoke, that they might reconsider it. Why, she told me, God only knows. But I thought, well, if that's the case, then what if we do a petition? My idea is we need at least 10,000 people, because our town is about 100,000. I'm just somebody who goes to church, has grandkids, goes to work. I don't know how to do that. I am not a media personnel. But, you know, when God gives you an opportunity, you got to go for it.
If you feel called to sign the petition, go to California's Right to Life website at calrighttolife.org/UNLO. At least 20 U.S. states are holding marches for life this year. That includes four states with recent rallies, showing the fight for the unborn goes from coast to coast.
In Kentucky, the third annual rally began with morning prayer and mass. Hundreds of pro-lifers, including students from Catholic schools across the state, made their way to the Capitol for a concert and rally.
We like to say everybody has a gift. And sometimes what we think may be, you know, not a gift, we find it's part of our life. And that was our messaging.
That was Adia Wushner, executive director of Kentucky Right to Life and a state representative for 16 years. Following the rally, more than 1,000 pro-lifers marched through downtown Frankfort to a memorial for the unborn at a local cemetery. Pro-lifers in Georgia braved the cold temperatures and rainy forecast for the state's annual March for Life in Atlanta. The state began with mass, followed by a rally at the state capitol and march through downtown Atlanta. Guest speaker David B. Wright, founder of 40 Days for Life, said, quote, "We are not fair-weather pro-lifers. We are motivated by conviction and not comfort." Lauren Eden, an abortion survivor, says she survived thanks to prayers from her father, who asked God to intervene in the attempted abortion.
David B. Wright, who was speaking, just had the crowd chanting, "Life is a gift. Life is a gift." And it was so loud. I'm like, those legislators have to hear us. Like, they have to be hearing this. And it's an awesome witness, you know, to have everyone together and just celebrating the fact that life is a gift.
Just brings a whole bunch of people together with the
Joy Martinik from the Archdiocese of Atlanta says another speaker shared how a local pregnancy center helped her during an unplanned pregnancy and how her story came full circle.
She found help at a local pregnancy center. And so that was a beautiful story in and of itself and had her baby. But now she's the director of that pregnancy center.
In Sacramento, thousands of pro-lifers took part in the 6th annual California March for Life. The day started with a prayer walk to a Planned Parenthood clinic, followed by a concert and a rally at the west steps of the state capitol. The rally featured several speakers, including a mom who successfully used the abortion pill reversal and a teenager who shared her testimony at almost being aborted. Jonathan Keller, another speaker at the rally, says state marches are absolutely vital in this new era of defending life.
They're also vital to encourage people here in California to remember that we're not in a lost cause, but just like it took 53 years to finally end abortion at the national level, we need to keep fighting as long as it takes to end abortion state by state.
And in Connecticut, more than 1,000 pro-lifers gathered in Hartford. The day's events included a concert, rally, and march around the state capitol. Ryan Bomberger delivered the keynote address. He was conceived in rape, and his biological mother chose life and offered him up for adoption. Today, he is an Emmy Award winner and father of four children, two of whom were adopted. He delivered a message on the importance of marches for life.
What other event at the state level is more important than this? Like, really? And to show up, whether you are, you know, a parent and the decision to allowing your child to miss school, whether you're, you know, you have grandkids and you feel like, oh, this is not my fight. I think that everybody should really make an effort of, like, you know, taking the effort to take a morning off, take a few hours to witness to this, because it's what the bishops call the preeminent priority, abortion. They've said it very clearly. So if this is really the preeminent priority when it comes to social issues, that means we have to show up.
In Maryland, the state's March for Life was canceled due to severe weather, including thunderstorms and a tornado threat. A math youth event and rally were all scheduled to take place in Annapolis. A member of the Maryland March for Life committee says travel concerns were also a factor.
when we were looking at the timing of the severe weather impact, it was right when people would be traveling to the march or traveling from the march. And with an unprecedented level 4 risk being forecast for the area, and what did end up coming to fruition were tornadoes and severe thunderstorms with very high impact winds all throughout the state, maybe not exactly on Annapolis, but in the areas where our attendees might have been driving from. That's what led to the decision to just call it early so that we could preserve some of our resources for a potential reschedule, but also to not have our guests and our guest speakers attending, you know, or traveling from, you know, far out at great expense.
A milestone in Central Mexico as lawmakers in the state of Aguascalientes unveil an initiative aimed at supporting maternal health and child development. The pro-life lawmakers are shown here after establishing the Day of the Unborn Child. One state representative said, quote, defending life will never be a mistake. The annual initiative is set for March 25th, the Feast of the Annunciation. Coming up, Prayer Poland and Protecting the Unborn. A closer look at a pro-life group's prayer initiative at the end of March every year. Its roots formed when the nation was under communist rule and is timed between two major feast days. That story next on EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Welcome back to EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly. I'm your host, Abigail Galvan. A group in Poland dedicated to fighting for the unborn launches a special prayer initiative at the end of March every year. EWTN Vatican contributor Sofia Szubak has more.
The Polish Association for the Protection of Life dates from the dark days when the Central European nation was under communist rule. It was founded by the late Antoni Zięba, a doctor of engineering. As a student in non-communist Vienna, he encountered an exhibition in a church for the protection of life, featuring photographs of unborn children.
It was then that he realized that what people in Poland were being told during those dark communist times, that abortion was just an ordinary method of birth control, and that a child before birth was not really a child, but some kind of jelly, a blastocyst, an unidentified tissue, was simply not true. He concluded that the only way to succeed in stopping abortion in Poland was to begin a great prayer in defense of life. Together with colleagues of the Krakow University of Technology, he founded a prayer crusade for the protection of conceived children. From this prayer crusade for the protection of conceived children later grew the Polish Association of Defenders of Human Life, based in Krakow.
This particular week of prayer for the protection of the unborn is in its sixth edition. It is timed between two major feast days, the Solemnity of St. Joseph and the Annunciation.
I think that from the Holy Family we can learn a great, great deal in this area. They truly knew what anxiety is, what fear is. They experienced situations where different things happened completely beyond their expectations. The week of prayer for the protection of life is, for us, an opportunity to show the pro-life perspective in a broader way. On the one hand, we of course pray for the unborn children and for pregnant mothers, but also, for example, for parents and educators. And this year in particular, we encourage people to seek guidance from Mary and Saint Joseph in the various difficulties we face in raising children.
This initiative doesn't stop at Poland's borders. The John Paul II Vatican Foundation in Rome decided to join in on the week of prayer and brought it to the Polish parish of St. Stanislaw, bishop and martyr.
Concern for life was one of the central themes in the thoughts of St. John Paul II. Therefore, the foundation that bears his name feels obliged to raise this issue and to support all efforts aimed at protecting life, especially the lives of the unborn, but not only. Prayer is what, on the one hand, moves God himself to take care of human beings, even though he does this constantly. But prayer also mobilizes us as people. It sensitizes us to certain issues that we ought otherwise not notice. Prayer is important for mothers who are carrying a child under their hearts. And it is important for all of us, for society as a whole, to keep in mind that this life, which we consider a great value, also requires our care.
Wymaga też troski z naszej strony.
Known for its large student community, the Polish Church in Rome often has the support and engagement of young people who are committed to the pro-life cause.
Ochrona życia, no to przede wszystkim...
Protection of life means, first and foremost, caring for the youngest and the most vulnerable, allowing them to be born. I believe that every life is valuable from conception to natural death, and our prayer truly has great power to support women who are simply in difficult situations.
I pray because I believe that as Christians we have a duty to defend life, especially the most vulnerable beings, the most defenseless children of God. We should also pray for them, that God may place in their path people who will support and help them, and who will assist them in making decisions, so that the child they are carrying in their womb may be allowed to live and be given a chance.
During the week-long initiative, prayers are offered for the unborn, mothers, politicians, journalists, doctors, and other groups essential in the fight for life. It is part of the call to uphold the dignity of life. In Rome, Zofia Tubak for EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Finally tonight, the church celebrated the Solemnity of St. Joseph last week. The beloved saint has many titles, including the patron saint of families. This year, his feast coincided with the 21st National Catholic Prayer Breakfast in the nation's capital, broadcast right here on EWTN. Speakers included Jonathan Rumi from The Chosen and Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. After the event, our own Catherine Hadro and Matthew Bunsen caught up with a Catholic author and financial advisor who has a message of hope for families.
And for more, we're joined by Chris McMahon, President and CEO of Aquinas Wealth Advisors. Chris, great to have you.
Thank you for having me out today.
So as an economic specialist, one of the things that we're seeing a lot in culture today, and we see articles about it, of parents who regret having children, and one of the reasons that they cite is financial fear or just the cost of having children. What's your answer to that?
I think that we do see that from time to time. What a great sadness. We say this all the time. There has never been a better time in the history of the world to be an American, right? There's never been a better time to be a parent. The world is, certainly there's two ways to look at it, but fundamentally when we see things, the economy, think about this, net worths have never been higher in our country. There have never been more small businesses in our country. There has never been more time when people are integrating their faith life and their financial life in our country. What a better time to have children. I think fundamentally that's the evil one telling us the great lie. Because when we look back on our lives, we work with thousands of families across the country, Catholic, and what they'll tell us all the time, and even some non-Catholics, the greatest joy in my life is that family. And secondarily, without that family, there is no reason to plan. There is no reason to achieve. The highest achievers, the best entrepreneurs, the best people of faith are those people that accept those children, given them by God lovingly.
And God provides.
Amen.
And Chris, you wrote this book, Faithful Finances, Six Steps to Establishing a Catholic Family Life. And I think what a gift to Catholic families amid this time of economic anxiety. Why write this book now?
I think it's because of that anxiety that's out there, Catherine. We've been so interested in seeing something. The families that have a tendency to do the best are those families that have the least. Isn't that so interesting? It's those families that are, two former focus ministers that are now working in their parish as youth ministers. Why are they the ones that are able to save and work? Because it's a priority. So I think we've gotten a little turned on our head as an economy and as a world. And I think we're chasing materialism like we never have before. And even Catholics were all guilty of this somewhat. I think this book was really to try to give people hope to say, it's not overwhelming if we take it step by step. We could take it, you know, eating an elephant one bite at a time. It's the same thing. That there is opportunity, as I say it all the time. We look at these families and say, those families that had the least ultimately had the most in so many ways.
So what are some of the practical bits of advice that you give to a family that is feeling a little stressed because of the cost of living and other things?
I think a couple of things. First of all, pray. Secondly, make a family mission statement, which is very important. And third, make that budget. We're all afraid to do that. We're afraid to say, oh, no. And there's so many tools that are out there now. I mean, certainly technology has been bad in so many ways, but some of these technology tools are just unbelievable. Budgeting, risk assessment, and really just kind of making an overall plan for ourselves, but a family mission statement. What do we as a family care about? What is important to us? And what are we going to fund? And all the rest of it, let it just go away. That's what I would say, because that's where you get caught up in the wrong things.
And your company, Aquinas Wealth Advisors, how do you differ from other financial advisors?
Thank you so much. We've been working around the country with individuals and institutions. I think our main differential is that we are kind of stem to stern Catholic, and we've developed some technology proprietary that helps people see, and individuals and institutions see what they're investing in. For the first time, again, technology's got some bad stuff, but when we could say to churches, parishes, individuals, wait a second, I've worked hard, that this is our mission, and these institutions are violating our mission. We can either go back to them and say, stop doing that, which they are doing sometimes. We're going to change the world, all of us together. We're very excited about that.
God bless you. And thanks for just breaking down that fear. I think you're right. That is the evil one. And we have to live in
He's
that freedom.
He's chirping in our ear, Catherine. We got to push him back.
Have trust.
Yeah. Amen. And pray.
Yeah.
And pray. Chris McMahon, thank you so
God
much.
God bless you both. Thank you for
God
having
bless.
Me. Thank you.
That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTNnews.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.